Good afternoon and welcome to the Dungeon Musings podcast. My name is Kevin Madison and I will be your friendly dungeon muser today. Today on this episode, I want to talk a bit about, well, a high concept idea, the idea being muscle confusion and the DM mind. What I mean by that is I want to talk about how shaking things up in terms of the types of games we play can actually benefit all types of games we play, you know. I recently had an experience where in the same weekend I ran Pathfinder 2nd Edition. I'm sorry, I didn't run Pathfinder. That didn't happen this weekend. I ran Starfinder this weekend, which is a pretty crunch-heavy game and it's a fairly simulationist game. And I also ran a game called City of Mist by Son of Oak Game Studios, which is a very narrative or story-focused game, with a very, very different approach to how you run the game. And I've thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed City of Mist and will intend to get it back to the table as soon as I can. And actually, it's a game that I definitely would consider running an ongoing campaign with, because there's a lot of great stuff with it. But more to the point of this episode, I found something happen in today's Starfinder session that I'm not sure I would have necessarily been live to before. I could very well have, you know, like maybe this is just my own, me recognizing my sensibilities, but I had something happen where we had a really, really interesting story kind of focused resolution to effectively a dungeon crawl. We had a two-session dungeon crawl that was involved going through a crashed starship. And anyway, and then that around this time as well, too, I'm into my third week of returning to the P90X fitness program. It's this kind of home training, high intensity workout thing where it embraces or adopts this approach called muscle confusion, where you do three weeks of effectively the same routine and changing it up every day between different things you're doing, and then it changes it up by the second month, and then you change it up again by the third month. The idea being that you don't give your muscles a chance to really kind of get used to or get into the routine of things in order to get the best results from it. And the two things obviously were floating around in the stew that is my brain at the same time, and that got me thinking about that's the way to potentially articulate the lessons that I might have learned from this weekend's games. So that's what I'm going to talk about today. Is we're going to talk about those two games, kind of what I drew from those experiences, and then I think what lessons we might draw from those things going forward. I say we as in you, gentle listeners, with me, but in the point me, I mean, I can have only control over myself, and I definitely have some lessons that I'll be learning, or taken away, I should say, from this particular outing. So let's get to the episode. So the first game that got me thinking about this was the game that sort of prompted what I think was the interesting development in today's session was City of Mist. And for those who aren't familiar, City of Mist is this story-focused game that is based on the idea that there is this city, and within the city there are embodiments of different mythological or, you know, folklore or parts of the zeitgeist or the popular culture that have manifested for some reason within certain living beings. And the characters you play in that are a combination of those two kind of things. You have one foot in the mundane world and one foot in the mythic. And it is, it reminds me an awful lot of, like, say, Matt Wagner's Mage. Well, there's three different series of Mage, but Mage, Mage Hero, Mage, I can't remember what the sequel was called. But anyway, the Mage series by Matt Wagner, the first one and the second one. And, it's the Hero, oh gosh, Hero something, and then Hero Defined, and then I can't remember what the third one is. But anyway, that series it features, you know, kind of characters who are modern incarnations of classic archetypes. There's massive series of young adult literature that's sort of in this vein as well, too, of kind of modern interpretations of things. And my buddy Chad Ginther actually has a really cool series of novels, a trilogy called the Thunder Road Trilogy, the first of which is called Thunder Road. And that one is about kind of Norse myths come made flesh in central Canada, in Winnipeg, my hometown. So, like, it's a definitely, it's a well-worn trope, but the interesting spin on this, for this game, is that it's also a film noir game. So it's a game of mysteries and mystery solving and whatnot. So, like, and conspiracy. And so it's a really very cool combination of a lot of stuff I really love, urban fantasy and mysteries and horror to a degree, if you want to incorporate that stuff. And, mythology, you know, and I love that. I mean, it's the total package is something I really enjoy. The game itself is gorgeous, is absolutely gorgeous. It has this really, like, the art may not be for everyone. It's line art, that is, so it's kind of like, really beautiful, comic art too, kind of, in the sense that it's, you know, it's line art with pencil, presumably pencil and ink, with colors added afterwards. But man, is it, it's beautiful. It's evocative. It is a gorgeous, it's a gorgeous product. But the thing that I found really interesting about it is that about that particular game, there's lots of other games that have good concepts that I don't necessarily fully embrace. Like the Dresden Files RPG, I just have not... I mean, I haven't owned it for very long, but I have not got into it. It is a game powered by the Fate engine, and I just never really got into Fate. I found it hard, I don't know, for whatever reason, I found it was hard to embrace it. In the same way that some other story-focused games like Powered by the Apocalypse, Apocalypse World, or other Powered by the Apocalypse games like Masks, The Next Generation, I had a hard time kind of figuring out how that's actually going to play at the table for me running that game, not necessarily as a player, but as a DM. Or game master, or whatever you call it. And it's interesting, in when I ran City of Mist this weekend too, I actually referred to myself as the proper name. Normally I default to DM just because that's, everyone knows what I mean by that. But in that one, it's actually called a Master of Ceremonies, and the MC, and I actually made a point of making that distinction. I've done that in the past with Marvel Superheroes actually as well too, where it's the judge, not the DM, but in any event, because I think the nomenclature is important for these things because it is a different type of game. So another game that I did actually grok a bit, quite a bit, was John Harper's Blades in the Dark, which is a really cool, it's not quite Powered by the Apocalypse, it's its own engine that has subsequently given birth to a bunch of other games, which are called Forged in the Dark games, one of which is Band of Blades, this kind of dark fantasy military game. And I've run that once with not a lot of success. I've run Blades in the Dark before with some success, but I always ran into a challenge of, I think in retrospect, so a lot of these games, a lot of the Powered by the Apocalypse games, there's a couple, I mean, sorry, not just Powered by the Apocalypse, but a lot of these story games, for those who are unfamiliar with them, what the goal of the game is not really to simulate a abstracted version of reality, you know, quote unquote reality. What they are is these games are conversations to discover what the story is. And it sounds, if that sounds very flaky, then please bear with me. It's not, it's not quite that flaky. There's in each of these games, there is definitely a game there as well too. There's things you can kind of, interesting mechanical decisions you can make to weigh choices, but they all relate back to the games. But the problem I've had with some of these games, I think in the past, in retrospect, and why I have not had a great deal of, I've just had a hard time keeping them running at the table, is that a lot of them run off of what are called playbooks. So you pick these playbooks, which are kind of like default archetypes with special abilities on them, and then you fill in some dots, you know, and then you get to playing. And then you've got some set things you can do in certain games like Dungeon World and Apocalypse World and Masks. They call them moves, and they do the same thing in this. But it's generally from a kind of a list of things. And like Blades in the Dark works a fairly similar to that, though it's a different dice mechanic. And I just had a really hard time wrapping my head around, like, well, if you're always going back to these only list of four things, and it's going to be kind of, how does that not get stale, you know? Like, it's great that you're doing a lot of heavy role-playing stuff, and in some ways there are non-dice mechanic things that are like powers that you can do that you don't need to make a roll for that just that don't interact with the dice mechanics. But I was having a hard time figuring out how to keep, in particular in combat, how to keep the game an actual game and not degenerate into just kind of meaningless tossing dice and then just making up shit on the fly. And I mean, I get that that's, in many ways what role playing is in general, but I've had a hard time wrap my head around that particular thing because it's really those types of games you're rolling a handful of D6s or in Apocalypse World's case and in City Mist, 2D6, and then you add some modifiers and then you look and see if you roll a 6 or under, you fail. 7 to 9, you succeed with cost, and then 10 or higher, you succeed fully. And that's in general how they measure things for the different moves. And I don't know. I mean, like, I couldn't wrap my head around how most of these games were supposed to actually play at the table. And then I had seen City of Mists and I'd read about City of Mists, and then it wasn't until the Modiphius had a sale that I was like, all right, fine, I'll pick it up. I knew that I had had some trouble with the other story games. And in fairness, I guess I hadn't ever run an Apocalypse World game. I just read them. But, what do you call it? The Monster of the Week is another one that's a Power by the Apocalypse. So I picked it up on basically a kind of a whim because it looked cool and I liked the concept. And I had some, there was a sale on at Modiphius, which was publishing the game on behalf of Son of Oak, from what I understand. And I had some gift certificates to cash in. So I figured, fuck it, I'll pick it up and I'll, give it a go once. And as soon as I started reading it, it just completely sucked me in. And the reason is because rather than going to a playlist or playbook and then kind of filling stuff out and filling and then making up, what you do is you make your character based on different themes. Each character is based on four different themes, and at least one of those has to come from a mythic, and at least one has to come from the mundane. And of those things, you do pick from a theme book, which is kind of like a playbook, but there's a great deal more freedom in defining the kind of like they call them power tags, but it's kind of, you can think of them as like, keywords that will define what, whether certain aspects of your character's, competency will come into play for different roles. So rather than like looking at the list and counting how many dice you have for whatever the number is, or whatever the ability is or skill in the case of Forge in the Dark games, what you do is you're going to roll 2d6 and add modifiers, but you look and see how many of your power tags would apply to that. And the power tags also will influence what you can, what in the fiction you can do without dice rolls too. So like, for instance, if you've got a character, one of the sample characters is a character called Salamander, and he is an embodiment of, he's a crime fighter, and he's also a embodiment of like a salamander, a fiery serpent from mythology. And one of his abilities is tendrils of plasma. And I mean, so like this is a character who he could easily, like light fires if you wanted to, or if you've got, you're describing a scene, and you're going to describe in that he's making use of his fiery tendrils to whack people or to capture people or whatnot, or catch and drag, then obviously that would apply to that role. And then you would, and similarly, you define all the different tags in that similar way. So there are plenty of suggestions, and there are key questions for each of the theme books to help you figure out what that question would be. And they're both really helpful for guiding that process, which can obviously, I mean, it could be very, very daunting to have such an open-ended thing to just make up stuff on the, come to pull stuff a whole cloth out of the air or out of your mind. What it does is it gives you a series of questions, quite a few questions for each theme, and that helps you define what your starting tags are for each theme. And then you combine those themes to make up your character, and then those can change over time and whatever. And for whatever reason, that just appealed to me a great deal more than the playbooks did for the other Power by the Apocalypse games. It seemed like you had a lot more freedom and creativity in creating your character. And also, I had a much easier time understanding what that was going to look like at the table. And in addition, from what I understand, this is something stolen from, or not stolen, but like inspired by, I guess, by the Fate system, is the idea of creating statuses and tags. So things that kind of are at play in certain scenes or that are affecting the characters. And that's kind of like, that's how you model things that will have a mechanical impact that are present in the story. So things like, you know, if it's a rainy, then you put that down as a tag, and then that could apply to certain roles and it could not apply. You know, if your character manipulates storm and weather, then maybe that's going to be helpful. If your character is trying to spot someone in the pouring rain, that might be a hindering one. And similarly, like effects on your characters, like demoralization or, you know, being hunted by someone or being injured. All of those things count as statuses as well. And then there's, the game has ways of addressing statuses and dealing with them too. And a lot of that is part of the conversation that the game is. City of Mist really, really emphasizes that the game is a conversation. But it still, to my mind, it still definitely feels like a game. Like there's solidly a game there. It's not just, I don't know. I mean, it feels much more like a game where you're making a character. You have a lot of narrative input. Or creative input into creating that character, and in addition, how that character plays at the table. But there's a bit, it feels like there's a bit more of a firm connection for what the MC's role is as the person running the game, than, and it's a little heavier of a hand than I think what it seemed to be in other Apocalypse World games. And I like that because, I mean, I don't know, I mean, like, that's just, it's much more in my comfort zone than those other games, so it's easier for me to get excited about and see what I would be doing with that game at the table. In addition, for whatever reason, the combat in that, it was easier for me to figure out what that looks like how, in terms of what decisions characters can make in violent scenes, than what I've had in others, you know. And I think a part of it, because I had recently run Star Trek Adventures, that may have been of assistance for me, because it uses something similar where there's tags or themes that are present in the game that have mechanical effect on the story as you go along. So anyway, that's what led me to kind of pick up the game, and then after I read it, I got very excited about running it, and then This week's been a bit of a rocky week. It's been very busy and it's just very frustrating in many ways in the day job. And I have to be out of town this week. So I was really, that was weighing on my mind. And I didn't feel like running the regular Barrow Maze game. So as a break, I decided to dive feet first into the City of Mist. And I 2 hours before our session, I threw together versions of our Barrow Maze characters in that, and it was really, really fun. You know, I mean, like, of the people who played, one is distinctly not a fan of the kind of Apocalypse World story focused games, and that's completely fair. Like, it's just, the game is, it's a very, very different approach. Like, the way that, it's a different approach to playing a game and experiencing the kind of collective story that happens when we play than what a traditional role-playing game is, like a simulationist role-playing game. And the difference seems to be, if you're not familiar and you haven't given any of these games a try, one of the main differences is you're not thinking like your character necessarily. You're thinking more like a narrator. So you're not... like, let's say you're trying to uncover things, you know, you're trying to uncover information in a game like Call of Cthulhu. What you'd be doing is going out and making dice rolls and going in a room and, you know, making a spot check or going to a library and making a research roll. But you're describing the very, very specific details of how you're going through all that stuff. In a story game, what you're doing, or at least in City of Mist, what you're doing is you're describing what your intent is. We figure out what move would apply. Moves can best be thought of as ways of resolving that action through game mechanics. Moved through me for a long time. I just could not wrap my head around that nomenclature. It seemed I don't know. It seems silly to me. I didn't quite understand why. To be honest, I still don't understand why. So someone could edify me as to why they're called moves. But in any event, there's that, and maybe it's because it moves the story along. I have no idea. But anyway, the moves are what you look to try and figure out how to resolve that. And you pick a move, unless in this case, if we're trying to uncover information, it would be investigate. We figure out what power tags would apply. We then make the roll, and that could be things like bookworm. If your character's got a bookworm tag, or friends at the library, or I don't know what, or what do you call it? People in city administration. Let's part of the city administration. Let's say that's one of your tags. Well, then you may be able to call. We could decide that that's some people work at the library. It'll give you access to special books. So that would be a way of adding to it. So then what you do. And even then, I'm already thinking too specific. Anything that might help you gather this information, we then make the roll. We see what the result of the roll is, and then that dictates what's happening in the story. And then we go back and talk about what's actually happened. And in the investigate in this game is where you unveil clues, and then depending on how many power tags apply, that determines and how your dice roll went, that determines how many clues you get access to, and then also what potentially else happens in the story. And that's where the DM or the MC, I should say, gets to then interact with the story and add things in that might make things more challenging. In the same way that like you would interpret a critical fumble, right? Like DMs would extrapolate that stuff, or if you're not using just flat bonuses for critical effects, it's you interpreting what that is. So it's very much what we do anyway, just it's codified in a specific move. So my dog's losing her mind at someone outside right now. So that's the game. I mean, that's what the game was. We sat down. One player who is not a huge fan of the Power by the Apocalypse or story focused kind of games, he said he still had a good time. He enjoyed it. He would play it again, but it's not his, first go-to game. But we had the by the contrast, we had one player who said, "I want to only play this." Myself, I'm kind of. It was interesting seeing those reactions, because I was sort of like I really really enjoyed it and I really wanted to run it again, but it's not the only kind of game I want to run. One sec here. So again, that's not the only game I'd want to run, but I really really enjoyed it, and there were so many good ideas in that game for things like structuring how you unveil the mystery, how you plan a mystery adventure. And the way they suggest is to think of it like an iceberg. There's a thing on top, the tip on top that you see, which is the sort of entry point to the mystery. And then as you work your way deeper down, you are pulled more and more into the mystery until you finally reach the tip at the bottom, which resolves the mystery. And it's just a good mental construct to kind of think of how you want to structure your passage through the mystery. And it's very loose as well, too. So it still feels like a sandboxy kind of thing at the table. But as you're going through this stuff, interesting things are happening with the dice results and with what the players choose to do. And it's very, yeah, it's really, really good. It was a really, really great experience. I can't wait to run it again. And then this weekend, I unfortunately had to cancel my Pathfinder game from this weekend because I wasn't able to, I had to get my fucking oil changed. But I today got to run Starfinder. And I was honestly, I don't know, I was a little trepidatious as to like, well, I'm really feeling this City Mist game. I really, really loved the experience with it, and I'd spent when I got back, I spent all the time at the dealership, and then when I got back, finishing reading the books, and I couldn't wait to run the game. So it was sort of back in my mind again, and I was going to be unfortunately didn't it fell through, but I was going to be running a quick little mystery for my son to introduce the game to him as well. Unfortunately, got wrapped up with working on a friend's car, so he couldn't play it. But then today comes and we have Starfinder, and where we had last left our heroes in Starfinder was as they were exploring a basically it was a dungeon crawl. I don't know why I'm trying to church it up here, but it's a dungeon crawl in a ruined starship, and it's got a definite horror tinge to it. But what happened in the course of the second session? So we play 3 hour sessions, 2 hours of which were spent for the most part. Kind of like, fighting robots, getting the gang back together. One guy had been kind of kidnapped by these robots. They fought some robots. They dealt with this like nameless, you know, or faceless voice on the other end of a speaker. And then we took our break and we came back. And the as a result of one critical hit on the on this dice roll. And again, like for those who are unfamiliar with Starfinder, and forgive me if I'm repeating stuff you already know, it's a D20 game. It's very much like D&D, just it's in it's in space. You know, it's you roll a dice, you add a number, and then if you roll higher than a difficulty class, you get a success. If you roll a nat 20, it's a critical hit. If you roll a nat 1, it's a critical fumble. That's pretty much it. There's not a lot of fancy other stuff. There's things your characters can do, like spells and guns and, you know, other crazy stuff, but dice mechanic-wise, the way that the rules resolve is that simple. Roll a d20, add a modifier, beat the target number. So we got a critical hit, and I started thinking about how to resolve this thing, because what I had some, you know, the way I approached this particular session was intentionally really, really vague. I had some rough ideas of elements I wanted to have happen over the course of the exploration to really give the guys the feel of that dungeon crawl thing, but I wasn't about to, you know, make a map, and then if they did come across this stuff, it would trigger or not. I've heard this described as a quantum ogre before, but I find that term a little, unless you're really ensconced in certain schools of OSR thought, it's not a really widely recognized term, or at least it's not something that I think is, it's intuitive enough, I guess, if you think of it. But what a quantum ogre means is that, like, all roads lead to that specific encounter. So that's the that's sort of the approach I took on this, was that, you know, these one way or another, these characters were going to encounter this stuff. And I wasn't making them slog through massive, you know, sprawling maps. I just wanted to give them a nice taste of a dungeon crawl experience with pit traps and, you know, random monsters and stuff like that, wandering around in the dark. And then so they, you know, that 20, they were scavenging these robots. And what that prompted, what became the way to resolve this whole thing. What I knew was that the sort of the big bad behind this, I was leading up for the guys to think there was going to be this kind of like crazy body horror thing, kind of like cybernetics meets the Cenobites from Hellraiser, you know, kind of thing. But my surprise twist was going to be that it's a ghost. You know, it's the ghost of this spirit who's just very lonely. You know, like that it was the lone survivor of the crew, and then it cannot. At the time, that's all I really knew about it, and I trusted that I would, you know, the story itself would unfold as the characters play through, and I'd figure out what I wanted to do or how it should play out at the you know, once the players got involved in that scene. And then what ended up happening is the guys gave me a really great opening where they broke open the, you know, these robots, and they said, well, is there a way of connecting the you know, connecting this thing up with other networks? And what I ended up kind of improvising was that this pain worshipping, you know, ghost had made alterations to all of these drones to create kind of like a congregation for them, you know, like to, so that they would have the same pain sharing cybernetic units that members of the church did. I described how they would, and trigger warning here, if you don't like gore and pain, you know, torture stuff, skip ahead maybe a minute or maybe 2 minutes. But what it was they would have these cybernetic implants where, they would share, like they would, all share, the kind of physical experiences and then would conduct surgery on each other without, what do you call it? Without, and implant more cybernetics without painkillers. So they would all emphasize and share in each other's you know, ecstatic kind of pain stuff. And I'd been building up this whole idea of who this guy was going to be. I'm sure they were expecting some big, terrifying, you know, I really don't know, but I mean, some like pain demon kind of thing. And then one of my players, so they came up with that idea, and they were going to use some of their powers in inventive ways to kind of like try and create. One guy could mentally tap into computers. One guy could mentally link other people and transfer information. And one guy had recent, you know, terrific memories of this goofy element from Starfinder that we introduced, which was this basically like a turtle or tortoise man wizard. And the character loved this character. So we used painkillers to basically get the guy high, think about the and watch shows of this amazing Zipzop, the slow motion close-up magician. And then the positive feelings he was getting from that, one guy would feed it to the guy who could link with computers, and the guy with computers would then link it through this network, thanks to the help of the guy who could hack things. And I sort of threw in that the guy who was hacked in, he was feeling this connection because of the powerful psychic, kind of spillover from this. And he gave this really great description of his character's backstory, of like, a happy time for him when this crew that had subsequently, some had died and they had fallen apart and whatnot, but this time when they had this really happy time together. And that gave me the thing I needed. I was like, oh, there, that's, you've put down something that I can use. This is a guy who worships pain, but and finds ecstasy and whatever else and enlightenment. But the one pain that he cannot live with is the pain of loneliness, because all of those people who he had shared that stuff with, they're all dead and long dead and passed on, and he's the only one left, and he's created these things. So we had this really cool scene where there was like this psychic landscape where they, they talked to this guy. They talked to him and told him that he needed to go on. And then I actually forgot about this. I wish I could take credit for it, but one of the players happens also to be a priest of the god of graves, like the god of death. So he was able to step in and kind of talk this thing, which had initially appeared as this monstrous pain demon thing, which was just a guy, a lonely spirit, right? Albeit with some really weird, or at least unconventional, religious beliefs. But they help this thing move on. And one of my players told me afterwards is like, wow, it was really, they really enjoyed it, but it said it really felt like a Doctor Who episode. And that's what Doctor Who is kind of about, is resolving things through understanding and compassion and dialogue. And I mean, the Doctor Who role-playing game, which I'll talk about in months to come, because I do have that on my list to run as well, but it also emphasizes that thing, because talking is always the first thing you can do in encounters. You can talk first, then you can run, then you can do something like with gadgets, and then you can shoot or fight. So fighting is always last. You always get to do those other things beforehand. But it just, I mean, I honestly don't know whether I may have been live to that and not just, having it being a really fun combat encounter where they finally encounter the lair where they, they discover that this guy's in a cryopod and head full of cybernetics and he's linked into the ship, and that's why they're, this thing is haunted, is that this, spiritual whatever, like echo of this person is still there and causing problems, and they'd fight it as a ghost. Instead of that, we had this way more interesting resolution, which was just the guys, talking through the stuff. And it was a, there's lots of, I feel like it was, one of the better sessions we've had. We've had a lot of really good sessions with Starfinder, but I mean, it just was really, really good and memorable. Like I can't remember having done something like that in a lot of sessions, certainly not with Starfinder, because it's such a it is such a simulationist game that it is pretty clear usually on the character sheet where what you can and cannot do. And because Paizo, is very live to the like quote unquote abuse of powers and abilities, that they do balance their stuff pretty well, so it's clear what it can and abilities can and cannot do. But this was just, man, it was so good. It had that old school kind of like making creative use of great powers. It had this very story focused thing where all we did was talk to, we didn't roll dice. Didn't roll dice to try and dictate whether they were successful in convincing this thing or not. And maybe I should have given some mechanical structure, but it really didn't feel like it needed it. The players all seemed really engaged. They had things to say. Although we had one player who admittedly at the start of the session said he was really tired, and he said that he just couldn't think of how to role play it. So we sort of just, I found a way around that and just said that, well, does it sound like this would, happen? And how did, and then that was fine. And we were able to let that character have a meaningful moment without requiring the player to come up with a whole bunch of dialogue that he did not expect to, to deal with, nor when he was as tired as he was, because at the time we were playing, it was like 10 o'clock Sunday night, his time. But anyways, I don't think if I had not run that game, City Mist. Before that, I don't know if I would have thought to let the story just go that way, that this would be a way to resolve this without, you know, feeling guilty about not running the game as written. You know, that you can't point to something in the Starfinder rulebook that tells you how to do this. Instead, we just sort of let the story unfold with the players adding to it and shaping it, and then me, you know, responding to what they're doing. It was great. Like, what a really, really fun and different way of resolving. And again, like, it's not to say that that's the way I would resolve every scene, but it was really useful to have those skills and those ideas in my back pocket when I, you know, when we ran that session. So that, and also in keeping with the relentless grind of doing P90X for the next 3 months or two more months now, it got me thinking about, like, you know, this is maybe one of the values you get, not maybe, but for myself, this is something where I can point to me forcing myself outside of my comfort zone and running something with a completely different approach than what I normally run has yielded distinct benefits for me in other games. You know, in the same way that, like, my thought and relentless attention to, like, mechanics in these more simulationist type games. One of the first things I like doing in these games is really drilling down and making sure I understand the core mechanic and then how the game kind of goes, is built out from there. Because I like to improvise stuff and I like to change stuff on the fly. So I like to have a solid understanding of what the underpinning rules are. But man, oh man, like it was great. And I think that running Star Trek was one of the Star Trek Adventures from Modiphius is one of the reasons why I was primed for this type of game. Now, I am still curious to take another step further. Masks, the Next Generation, and Monster of the Week have both really intrigued me in terms of their concepts, but I've steered clear of them only because I just don't know. You know, I don't know if I could run a Power by the Apocalypse game well. Same thing with Band of Blades. I ran Band of Blades when I was in the beta, and I loved it. Like, I really, really loved it. And I don't feel I did a very good job of helping the players understand how they were going to interact with that game. But I think I might have a way of doing that now, you know? I'm not going to do it until I get a chance to run more of City of Mist, because I don't want to confuse the games. I want to make sure I keep this one in. But I guess, you know, one final thing I'll say about these story games too that I find is interesting is that, so for games that are purported to be really story-based and whatever, there are fans of those games, and I judge this only on comments that I've received on my channel when I've run them. Fans of those games sure have a strong fucking opinion as to how it's supposed to be run. Which is crazy. Like, you know, the people who are the fan bases that I feel are the most dogmatic about, like, a quote unquote capital R right way to run the games and wrong ways to run the games are fans of some of these story-based games and Pathfinder First Edition fans. You know, where there's like and Hero System games. Hero System fans are equally like that too. They have a very clear idea of how the game is supposed to be run. That's not all Hero fans. And to be honest, not the people who I have made friends with over the course of running the channel, but randos who have posted about, you know, things that they say I've done wrong, where the contemplation isn't that, look, I don't care. I'm not running it that way because I don't care for the purpose of you know, the experience at the table. It doesn't matter to me. But anyway, that's a weird thing. But I'm intentionally not keeping myself, you know, married to the game. If I'm going to change some things or, you know, do things that aren't expressly set out in the rule book, that is, in my mind, absolutely in the spirit of the game. But anyway, I'm more griping about my, you know, past experience with the fan base of some of these games. But if you have not checked out City of Mist before, and I've made this sound interesting at all, there is a free starter set you can get from DriveThruRPG, and also a different starter set you can get from Son of Oak. If you go to cityofmist.co.co, you can find and download the starter set there as well. I really, really enjoyed it, and it was very Yeah, it was good to get my mind working in a different way. I think it will be really good for me to get a game like that to the table in 2020 in terms of my DM skill set. To have a game like that running ongoing, as well as the more crunchy tactical games like Pathfinder and Starfinder and Ash, that I run normally on my channel. In addition, it's really highlighted just how good Star Trek Adventures is. Like, Star Trek Adventures is very much a middle ground between story games and crunch games, and it is a great game. Really, really good. We ran the first adventure over the course of about four sessions, and from the starter set, that is. And I intend to return to that one as well too. But even that, like, has helped informed other skills and other ways of approaching things, and it's got me thinking of ways of throwing some of the more mechanically minded story things in to some of my more crunchy games too. So, yeah, really good stuff. I mean, it's variety is the spice of life, as they say, and I think that not only that, it also makes for a more agile and easily adaptable DM's brain for when players do crazy stuff and you want to make an adventure out of their inventive, flights of fancy. So yeah. So anyway, that's the experience I've had recently. If you haven't checked out these games, and again, like, just like one of my players, it may not ever be your favorite game. It may not be something that you want to run ever again. But even going through the process of understanding how to present that game and how to teach people how to play, and then how to run that at the table, I think was really helpful. Even just to show a very different perspective on the gaming experience, because it really is. It's got a different feel at the table, but still insanely fun as well too, and with plenty of stuff you can pillage to bring back to your more old school or more simulationist style games. That said too, I mean, like, I also ran GURPS, which is an incredibly simulationist game recently, and I fucking love that game too. And I'm really playing up some of the mechanics of that game that do have basically story focus. It's story game stuff before there were story games. So anyway, so that's that episode, and an argument for building up, for adopting, I guess, an approach of muscle confusion for the DM brain. Let's make with the outro. So that's it for that episode. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, please don't hesitate to shoot me a voice message on Anchor. You can reach me on Twitter at Dungeon Musings. You can find me by email at Dungeon Musings. Sorry, dungeonmusings@gmail.com is my email address. And you can also find us on the Dungeon Musings Discord server. I don't know how to describe that link in audio format, but what I can say is if you go to the Dungeon Musings YouTube channel, any of the videos we've posted from the last month or so have links in the descriptions of those videos to the Discord server. You can join us there. We've got channels dedicated to, I mean, every one of the games we run, as well as some other games, and there's a great Looking for Group channel that seems to be pretty active as well, with some great guys. Are great folks, I should say, who are organizing, running, and playing games. Yeah, so it's you're free to join us on there, and we can chat about this or anything else as well. We also sold. Yeah, I guess that's it. That is sort of my what I had to say about muscle confusion, and yeah, I mean, I what I can say is just in closing is that it's. Running the game, definitely. Reading the game was really, really interesting as well. Running the game was such a really good experience, which is not how I felt after some of the other story games I ran. And it could be because I've just grown as a DM. It could be because this is just a better fit for me. Who knows? But a better fit with the players, although I doubt that's the case because everybody I play with is a great player. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it just for whatever the reason was, this really, really clicked. I cannot wait to run City of Mist again, and I am grateful for the lessons that it taught in how to improve and to make for some really interesting out of the box thinking scenes for my other games. So yeah. Anyway. Until next time. Thanks again for listening, and happy gaming.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.